I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. My guest today has called Winston-Salem home for more than two decades. He went to school here, worked here, paid taxes here, and helped build the very community many of us take pride in. But now, because of the expiration of temporary protected status for Honduras, he's facing unemployment and uncertainty, not for anything he did wrong, but because of a system that has never offered people like him a pathway to permanence. Today, we'll talk about what temporary feels like after 25 years, the realities of TPS, and how we as a community can respond with compassion and understanding. Brajan, thank you for locking in with me. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Man, I appreciate you making time for this. You know, I first learned about your story through a mutual friend of ours, Chuck Spong, over at Love Out Loud. And he was talking about some of the work that you've done in our community. And then I started just really keeping up with some of your Facebook posts this year about what's going on with immigration in our country. And I was really fascinated with your story, because so often we see these stories on the 6 o'clock news or Fox News or MSNBC or whatever your favorite acronym to watch is. But sometimes we don't realize these stories are right here in our own backyard, right here in Winston-Salem. So I really wanted my audience to have an opportunity to meet you, learn more about your story and sort of what you're going through as a result of the change in the administration. So I guess let's just get started with that, man. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you came to Winston-Salem and what life here in the big city has been like.
Sure. So I was born in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and my family and myself immigrated here many, many years ago, around the time where I was 3 or 4 years old, actually due to Haines. My mother worked at Haines in my country, and we knew there was Haines located here in Winston-Salem. And so I think about that a lot, but that's what brought us to this little town here in North Carolina. We don't have too much extended family here, but ever since then, grew up here. Went to Metal Arc Elementary, Metal Arc Middle, graduated from Ronald Reagan High School, home of the Raiders, and attending Forsyth Tech, hopefully graduating this semester. But grew up right here in Winston-Salem, and I've been working in banking for 10 years now. Happily, I was working before my status expired at Wells Fargo in downtown Winston-Salem. I'm very proud of Winston-Salem and downtown and how it's come up and all the vibrant things that go on down there.
And that is a really, really impressive story. And sounds like you have been a staple here in the Twin City for quite some time. So I appreciate you sharing some of that. You know, when you look back over the last 25 years of you being here in the country, what are some moments that made you feel most connected to this country and perhaps maybe even our community?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is just growing up. I mean, high school was a vibrant time for anyone, really. But what was interesting to me is because when I moved here, I thought I was just like anyone else. And, you know, how do you tell a young child that they're an immigrant or that they're a U.S. citizen or that they're this? I didn't actually learn about who I was until I was 15. And by that time, I already felt like I belonged, like I was a part of this community. I actually wanted to enlist in the military, and I spoke with a recruiter, and through that endeavor of speaking to them and finding out all the qualifications and having that discussion with my parents, that's when I found out that I was ineligible and I found out who I was. But up until I was 15, I felt like everyone else and grew up right here. I think one of the biggest things is just the sense of community in Winston-Salem. Everyone talks about it. Everyone who's from Winston knows it, that it's a city, but it's small enough to where everyone kind of knows each other. Everyone knows the events that go down here. Fiesta every year is a beautiful event. That going to the Dash, going to Collidium. I grew up going to, what was it, Cyworks back in the day on the north
Children's
side of
Museum
town.
When I was a kid. So I'm dating myself here.
Yeah. So I grew up going there before they moved downtown, and now getting a chance to see them downtown. You know, I remember seeing downtown and all the changes that has happened there. And now as an adult, getting to enjoy all the beautiful things of Trade Street. But yeah, I love Winston-Salem. And, you know, I spent When I became an adult, I spent 2 years. I moved away to California and enjoyed that time, but this is home. And that's why I came back here, because I can't find any better place to live than Winston-Salem.
You know, Brajan, you might love Winston-Salem more than some people that are from Winston-Salem, you know, as I listen to you. So, no, thank you for sharing your passion for our community. You mentioned when you were 15 years old, as you say, that's when I found out who I am. And you talk about just that, I guess, that identity shift and learning about your temporary protected status from Honduras. As a teenager, how did that really affect you, or how did that begin to shape your life as a kid in high school?
It was really interesting, because I thought to myself, so what happened was, there was a recruiter that came to the school, and I just grew up in that culture in the 2000s of wanting to serve. I wanted to travel. I wanted to get, you know, a chance to soak my feet into different cultures. And so I thought the military was a great pathway. And I knew my parents always didn't have too much money to pay for school. So I also thought that was an opportunity to get some benefits for furthering my education. So I talked to a recruiter. The recruiter came to my house and had a whole conversation with me and my parents. And we sat down, and the entire time that we're having the conversation, my parents are giving me kind of a weird look. And I didn't know why until the recruiter left. And that's when they sat me down and we had the talk, and they told me about who I was and what my status is. And the thing that's interesting about it is, it feels like everything changed, but also nothing did, because I was still who I was. I was still, just at the time, a sophomore in high school. I had high school to contend with. And for a high schooler, that's everything. Yeah. They're dealing with all the you know, nuances of growing up and being a teenager. It really started to hit me when I became 18, because then that's when it really settled in as far as the things that I can and can't do. When I turned 18, I learned that I would pay out-of-state tuition to go to school. No, regardless of how long I had lived in North Carolina, I would be paying out-of-state tuition, which is 3 times the tuition rate. I wouldn't be able to vote. That was another one. And among other things, you know, I couldn't become a police officer. I couldn't join the military. And so that's really when it hit me, is becoming an adult and understanding the real differences that it makes.
You know, you've been here since you were 4 years old, and, you know, you went to school, you went to high school, you hung out in downtown and had dinner at Six and Vine, and, you know, just really enjoyed the pleasures of being not only here in our country, but also in the community that you seem to love, which is Winston-Salem. Did it ever cross your mind at any point that temporary protected status for Hondurans would come to an end? Did that ever just dawn on you at any moment?
Always. I think learning about it in 15, I didn't fully grasp it. I understood aspects of it, especially because I believe when I was 15, it was the early 2010s. And, you know, there was a lot of conversation in the political space about DACA. So it was something that had planted a seed in me. I guess the difficulty for me is really wrapping my head around is what does that mean, being temporary, for me in my life? Because my life has been here. So ever since I was 3-4 years old, I've been living here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And so all that's been temporary. And now, you know, I'm 18 years old, 19 years old. Now I'm 29 years old. And so all that has been temporary. It's really difficult to wrap my head around that. Like you said it yourself, you know, over two and a half decades here, it's just not something that I'm able to grasp, because I think, you know, this is home. This is routines for me, where I go to eat. I know this town like the back of my hand. I've been to every parts of it, whether it's through volunteering or schooling or field trips or, you know, whatever work calls me to do. It's difficult to wrap my head around that. Just everything, every aspect of my life seems temporary when it's been all my life. But it gives you a sense of anxiety and a sense of unease. And it's difficult to grasp, really.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to you. I mean, you know, can you imagine just living your whole life in a place? I mean, since you were 4 years old, and all of a sudden being told that everything you've done, all the contributions you made, You know, all the great work you've done has just been temporary, and some kind of way it can just be washed away. Now, are your parents still here in the country, or?
Yeah, my parents are still here. I have a brother and sister. My brother's in the Air Force, and my sister is 19 years old in college. And they were born here. So I have a brother and sister who are U.S. citizens. They were born here. They were born at Forsyth Medical, and they've grown up here as well. They live here in Winston-Salem as well still. We've all called this place home. And so we're deeply rooted here.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're now you're bringing in the whole element of just literally breaking up a family as well. Now, I can imagine if you came here at 4 years old, I'm assuming you didn't ask to be brought here. You know, you just came here because obviously this is something that your parents decided. So for my audience that may be unfamiliar with the whole immigration process and how things work, and again, if you're not affected by this, you might not be as engaged with the issue. How does that work? How is it that they can tell someone that was brought here at the age of four, against, you know, pretty much against your will, that now all of a sudden you have to leave?
It's really tough. And I think, you know, immigration, like you started the conversation with, it's always, you know, on the news networks, and I feel like it's one of those topics that it's so heavily discussed, but so little is actually understood about the processes that take place in immigration. Unfortunately, I sit in the same position that hundreds of people here in Winston-Salem sit with, that hundreds of thousands across the U.S. and millions across the U.S. that have to deal with, where my parents and myself included are barred from adjusting our immigration status because we did come here illegally. I came here illegally. Now, I, like you mentioned, and, you know, I came to where my parents were. I was 3 or 4 years old. I came to be with them. I didn't have a say in that matter. And so because of the way that we came here, we're barred from the ability to adjust our status until there is some legislative process created. And that takes an act of Congress to do.
Literally.
An act of miracle, an act of Congress is how I joke with people. And that's what it does. And so, you know, different things can, you know, presidents, both types of presidents can all do certain things and say certain things. You know, President Obama started DACA. President Trump has done other policies. But the only individuals who can create a pathway to citizenship is Congress. And that's who, you know, I want to speak to and try to share my story with, so try to humanize it. Because you have these situations where, and it's just not just my family, I'm sure there's millions of other families that are mixed status, where they have, you know, family members who are U.S. citizens and some who are not. But unfortunately, they can't adjust their status due to circumstances.
Is this work that maybe you've advocated on the behalf of over the years? I mean, have you spoken with any of our elected officials about this issue, or?
I have tried over the years. Yes, I volunteered with the Hispanic League for many years. I sat on the board with them, and I have had tried to have conversations with our local representatives. I had communications that I've saved between myself and Virginia Fox and Mr. Budd. And unfortunately, I haven't made too much progress there, but I have also reached out to other folks across the state. Different organizations to just try to elevate the awareness of the situation and advocate for folks like myself, because my story, I don't feel like I'm special. I don't feel that I'm unique, because literally there are hundreds of us here in Winston-Salem. We're culturally, and because of the situation right now politically, we're taught to keep our head down and to not make ourselves a target. You know, I was once told that the nail that sticks out gets hammered. But I think if we don't discuss these things, it continues to be this very nuanced and heady thing only discussed on news networks that people don't really understand and or have the ability to connect with and relate to and humanize. But I have tried to have conversations. Unfortunately, Virginia Fox did not give me too much time.
Yeah, I mean, when you have engaged with some of our elected officials, again, for some of us that are just really on the outside looking in, and you know, people like myself who just scratching their head at this right now, what's the response from a legislator to someone who's been in the country for 25 years, literally since they were 4 years old, building a life here in America?
It's not an easy response. So the responses I've gotten is one of two, and I've bumped into Ms. Fox, who I respect and you know, appreciate the public service work that she does, but I've bumped into her a number of times. But unfortunately, the reaction that I often get is, including the reaction that I most recently got when I bumped into her at a Greater Winston-Salem event, is just, I'm not supposed to be here. When I've discussed this with other folks, including Mr. Bud's representatives, you know, they bring up the issue of the border, which I completely understand wanting to deal with that and wanting to find a solution for that. But also the border is, you know, is thousands of miles away. And we have people here in our community who pay taxes, who contribute, who need their help and who need their support and need them to represent us, because I pay taxes, but I don't vote. And but I want them to also represent me if possible.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to you, I'm frustrated. I mean, it's got to be incredibly frustrating for you because, again, you know, you want to reiterate, I've been here since I was 4 years old. And it just seems like to me it's a little bit more common sense as to how we address and how we fix this. I certainly agree that we shouldn't have open borders and we do need to have some immigration policy. I totally agree. Need to know who's coming in the country. We need to know who they are, backgrounds, all those stuff. I totally agree. But I also think we got to stop acting like jackasses here and realize that we've got people that are already in the country, that we've got to be able to create some kind of a legal pathway for them to come out of the shadows and and stop having to feel like they've got to hide from enforcement. You mentioned a couple times that you know, you're not the only one. There's hundreds of people that are here in our community that's dealing with the same issue. I actually know some, to be honest with you, and many came over when they were children. You know, similar situation, Brajan, that you have. When you're interacting with some of these other people that are facing the same issue as you, and maybe they're living in the shadows, talk a little bit about what it looks like for them day to day and sort of their emotional state and what it is. What does it feel like day to day to have to live that way?
It's really tough, especially because you want to build a community. One of the things that I have talked to and one of the reasons that we do with the Winston-Salem Soccer Association is we try to build that community, try to help people feel like they belong, because maybe they can't talk about who they are or they feel like they'll be judged. But it's important to us to know that we just want to, for example, with the Winston-Salem Soccer Association, we just want to play soccer. We just want to have fun, to get a little exercise in after work. It is tough. Right now, there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of precautions that are being taken. And there's this very nuanced thing, because everyone seems right now to be dealing with something different. There's folks who perhaps have always been undocumented and folks like myself who are recently have become undocumented. And so there is a level of fear there because, you know, everyone in the government knows where I live. In order to have the work authorization that I did, we filed annual paperwork with them. We went through background checks with them. You know, we paid taxes and we filed taxes every year. All the same taxes comes out of my paycheck that comes out of every other U.S. citizen's paycheck, including Social Security, Medicaid, and all that stuff. So it's a very weird and nuanced situation this year. But we just try to create the community where we can, try to create support groups where we can. And that's the best we can do. Unfortunately,
you know, you mentioned a couple times about the position that you had to vacate at Wells Fargo, which I'm sure that's incredibly frustrating, you know, on top of everything else you've shared with us today. But, you know, now that you've lost the status, does that mean you're totally, you know, unauthorized to work here in the country or in our community? I mean, what is your financial situation look like going forward?
It's a mess, honestly. It's a mess. Yeah, I'm not authorized to work. I lost my work authorization as of September 8th. And so Wells Fargo, despite what my boss feels about my work and you know how much I enjoy going to work, you know, their hands were tied and they had to put me on leave. So I'm not collecting a paycheck right now. And it is incredibly difficult for that because I worked so many years. I started off working in a branch as a banker and I worked my way up through different positions. And now I was blessed to have the position I had because I loved my team. I loved the work that we did. I worked in wealth management and I specialized in trusts and nonprofits, helping them make sure their dollars last as best as long as they can. And so that's really painful. And on top of that, you know, I was trying to build the American dream. I was saving, I was putting money away in 401k, trying to save up for a house. And, you know, now not collecting a paycheck, I'm having to dip into my retirement accounts, into all my savings just to survive. And so it feels heartbreaking that I've spent all these years, these past, you know, however many years that I've been working, to build what I thought was the American dream and just keep my head forward, looking forward. And now, unfortunately, that's gone. And so it is sad.
Yeah. It sounds like the American nightmare. Quite frankly, I mean, this is just a captivating story. I mean, to listen to, you know, someone that has been such a positive contribution to their workplace, to their family, to our community, to really get targeted in the midst of all this just really sounds pretty asinine to me. You know, President Trump, when candidate Trump, you know, when he ran last year, you know, it was very clear that there was going to be a crackdown on illegal immigration. I think many of us, including many of his own supporters, didn't think that people like Brajan would be targeted. We thought that we were going to be targeting criminals and people of that nature, but not hardworking taxpaying people like yourself. Why do you think immigration has become such a polarizing topic in American politics?
There's so many layers to it. And, you know, I agree with what you mentioned. I don't think anyone across the political spectrum disagrees that if someone is behaving badly, if someone commits crimes, you know, that there needs to be a system in place for justice. And so when it comes to though folks like myself who have been here, who do background checks, who pay extra fees above taxes just to live and work here, it's really difficult. And I think it's largely potentially a fear. You know, oftentimes people think, and I think it's a fear based on what I believe is not correct information, because I study economics. That's what I study in school. And, you know, I've worked in wealth management and studied the economics of the U.S. to understand how immigration, you know, almost always benefits any communities. But it's a base of fear from, you know, rising costs or, you know, I guess a fear of losing one's culture. And so it's so many different reasons, but I hope people learn that folks like myself, you know, I have always felt myself to be very American, you know, growing up here and listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers and watching football on TV. I was a Carolina Panthers fan, sadly, but, you know, we grew up here and we're part of this community and we've been part of this community for multiple decades. It's not like we're changing anything new. We are already rooted here. And I think that there's lots of times that we bring many, many benefits to the communities. You see the types of people who are out there building housing, and who those folks are and trying to build more affordable housing for everyone. It's typically immigrants. And so I think it's oftentimes from a place of fear that folks are potentially against immigration.
You know, I mentioned earlier that I've been following your story on Facebook and some of the posts that you've made over the last several weeks. What have been some of the other responses from your neighbors here in Winston-Salem when they learn about your story?
I've From folks who I, you know, meet on a day to day, who I socialize with, it's been an overwhelming positive response, and it warms my heart. And it, especially during a time where I really could use it, I could really use the blessing of their friendships and the warmth of their kindness. But I always try to also step outside my social circle, because I think it's really important. And that's who I'm really trying to reach out to, is folks who I might not on a day-to-day basis socialize with. I made a post several months ago, and then recently I made a post on Reddit about my situation, hoping to meet folks who I might not meet on a day-to-day and have a conversation with them. Sorry, I have a dog.
It happens.
But I try to have a conversation with those folks, and it's a lot of the same reasons. I think it's one of two reasons why folks are typically against immigration. It's either an economic reason, which I often can discuss those things with them and show them different studies and what I have personally studied to try to enforce my point about how immigration is a positive, has a net positive for our communities. And then the other reason is just cultural. And that's a more nuanced conversation. And it takes a lot of empathy and understanding, because I do believe everyone deserves empathy, even you know, if they disagree with you. And so it's just trying to have those types of discussions with folks like that.
In one of your posts that I read, and it may go back to October or so, but you reference biblical figures like Abraham and Moses, who also sought refuge. How does your faith and your spirituality sustain you during the season you're in right now?
I grow closer to it. I think, I've grown up here in Winston-Salem. I used to go to Calvary Baptist Church, and now I go to Iglesia Sin Fronteras, which is an amazing congregation. And my faith grows stronger. Understanding some of the challenges historically that other folks have faced. And that's what's interesting, is immigration isn't new. It's not a new issue. It's something that has been around since before biblical times. And so trying to find common sense solutions and compromises to immigration, I think, is important to us. But it's also coming from an understanding that it's not something new, where Jesus's parents immigrated, Moses had immigrated along with people, other folks from exile. And so it's something that's always been a part of. And I grow closer to my faith during this time. I think, and for folks who may not have faith, one of my favorite quotes that I have held very dearly during this time, it's actually from Star Wars, and it's from Princess Leia. And she says that if you only believe in the sun when you see it, you'll never make it through the night. And so I have hope that people will have more conversations such as the one that we're having, and see the humanity in immigrants, and see that we're trying to make our homes and our communities better, not just for us, but for everyone else.
Yeah, I often like to remind people, in case they're just not paying attention, but the First Lady is an immigrant. And you would think,
and the Second Lady,
and you would think that this administration, out of all administrations in history, would look pretty favorably on immigration, but I guess I'm wrong. I feel like I'm in opposite land most days with this administration. You know, you talk about some of the churches you've attended, and just the role they play in your life. Do you feel like the churches should be doing more to support immigrants like yourself and others around the country that are dealing with this issue?
I believe that here in Winston-Salem, a lot of the faith organizations do a lot of advocacy work. I believe, you know, we had talked about briefly our mutual friend Chuck Spong, and you know, he's part of a congregation that, you know, and Love Out Loud is a great organization that does a lot of advocacy work. I know that there's been conversations here recently about faith and the current administration, and I do believe here in Winston-Salem there's a lot of advocacy being done within the faith institutions. I haven't been to every church in Winston-Salem. I have gone to several, but I haven't been to all of them. So I don't know. But I do believe we do have a strong community here in Winston-Salem, and especially within the faith organizations here and the churches.
You know, someone in my audience, Brajan, might be listening to this conversation and just learned about your story and now might even become more aware of the story of hundreds of their neighbors right here in their own community. What can listeners do to make sure stories like yours is seen and heard?
Well, I think the thing that it sounds incredibly basic, I suppose, but we need allies. We, like you mentioned, and I've mentioned, there's hundreds of us here in Winston-Salem, and we are taxpayers, but we don't get a chance to vote, and we're not often heard. But we, and that's why allies are just so incredibly important, and having these conversations and advocating for folks and calling your representatives to let them know that we have neighbors that pay taxes that are positive contributors to this community that are legally barred from adjusting their immigration status. Unfortunately, and a lot of children who were brought here, you know, and they didn't have a choice in that matter, but because of choices that were made decades ago, they're barred from ever getting a chance to adjust their immigration status. And we need to advocate for those folks, because I have never been, I've never had the privilege of voting, but I have grown up learning about U.S. history, and I feel like I'm American, and I want to continue to be American, but I think we need allies and we need advocates and we need people to call their representatives to let them know that our voice matters.
Well, look, Brajan, I'm going to be the first to say it. You are definitely an American. You are more American than me and many others. And so you are certainly you have done all you needed to do to earn that status and earn that title. And I pray that some kind of way God softens the heart of this administration so that they can start to see people like you and so many others around this country as actual human beings and not just another number or a name on a piece of paper that can be deported and ripped apart from their family. So I know that it takes a lot of courage to come out and do what you did today and speak out, not, you know, especially with all the uncertainty around your status. So I also want to just show you my gratitude for the courage that you've demonstrated today. And I think so many of your neighbors in this community, when they listen to this conversation, they will also value the contributions that you're making. I want to encourage my audience to support the Hispanic League, also Love Out Loud. Those are two great organizations that you could donate to because they are out advocating on the issue that Brajan has brought to our attention. And I strongly encourage you to pick up the phone and call your elected official, whether that's your House representative or reach out to Senator Tillis and Senator Budd and let them know what you think about this story and what you would like for them to do as your representative. Because our guest today reminded us that immigration isn't just a policy debate. It's a human story. It's about neighbors who love their families, serve their communities, and believe in the same ideals that built this nation. If you are moved by this conversation, consider supporting local organizations that help immigrants and refugees in the triad, or reach out to someone in your circle who may be living in uncertainty right now. Compassion starts with connection. You can listen back to this episode. You can share it. You can support our ongoing work at LockedIn.cash with a donation. But more importantly, you can also make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that's where you can lock in with me. But if you happen to miss me there, check me out on my podcast, whether you get Pandora, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you like to get your favorite podcast, you can always lock in there. And as always, until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.